The night Lady Amara Elloway confessed the truth, she believed only the dead roses could hear her. She was wrong. Behind the black yew hedge, less than 10 feet away, the Duke of Blackridge stood perfectly still, one gloved hand resting against the cold stone wall, his face hidden in shadow, his breath caught in his chest, as if the garden itself had closed around his throat. On the other side of the hedge, Amara knelt beside the broken fountain where no water had flowed for years. The winter moon washed her pale blue gown almost silver. A shawl hung loosely around her shoulders. Her dark hair had slipped from its pins, and one curl clung to her wet cheek. She had not meant to cry. She had promised herself she would not. Not tonight. Not while the entire house glittered with candlelight. Not while her aunt's guests danced in the ballroom. Not while Lord Malrek Voss, the man chosen to marry her in 3 weeks, laughed loudly over champagne and spoke of her as if she were already part of his estate inventory. But the garden had called to her like a secret door. And now, beneath the dead rose arbor of Avington House, Amara pressed both hands to her mouth and whispered the words she had buried for 4 years. "I still love him." The Duke behind the hedge went cold. Amara lowered her hands. "I tried not to," she said, voice breaking. "I tried to hate him. I tried to remember the letter. I tried to remember that he chose pride over me, silence over me, duty over me. But I cannot hate him. Heaven help me, I still love him." The words struck Nathaniel Vale, Duke of Blackridge, harder than any blade could have done. 4 years. 4 years since Amara Elloway had returned his ring in a folded note, so cold it had almost seemed written by another woman. 4 years since she had told him she had mistaken gratitude for affection, that she would never marry a man whose title brought so many enemies, that she wished never to hear from him again. 4 years since his father's sudden death had pulled him from London to Blackridge, where duty, debt, and grief had chained him so completely he had not returned to Avington until every letter he sent came back unanswered. And now she knelt in the garden, whispering that she still loved him. Nathaniel closed his eyes. The dead roses scraped softly against the stone in the wind. Amara drew something from beneath her shawl, a narrow black ribbon. Nathaniel knew it at once, his signet ribbon. He had tied it around her wrist the night before he left for London, laughing because she had stolen his gloves and refused to give them back unless he left some token in exchange. She had kept it. The note she sent him had returned the ring, but not the ribbon. "I should have burned this," she whispered. "Aunt Lavinia says only fools keep ashes. Perhaps I am a fool. Perhaps I have always been one." Nathaniel's hand tightened against the stone. "Aunt Lavinia." Lady Lavinia Corvin, Amara's aunt, mistress of Avington House, famous for sweet smiles and poisonous pauses. Nathaniel had never trusted the woman, but he had underestimated her. That, he now suspected, might have been his first mistake. Footsteps sounded from the ballroom terrace. Amara flinched and stuffed the ribbon back into her glove. Nathaniel stepped deeper into the hedge shadow. A woman's voice cut through the cold. "Amara." Lady Lavinia stood at the top of the garden steps, wrapped in emerald velvet, diamonds trembling at her throat. "You are wanted inside." Amara rose at once, wiping her face quickly. "I needed air. You need obedience." The words were spoken softly. That made them crueler. Amara lowered her eyes. "I will come. Lord Voss has asked twice where you went. A bride should not make her future husband search for her like a misplaced shawl." "I am not yet his bride." Lady Lavinia's smile did not move. "You will be." Nathaniel's jaw tightened. Amara stepped onto the gravel path. "He frightens me." "Most husbands do before one grows accustomed to them. He is cruel. He is wealthy. He watches the maids as if they are livestock. Then he has practical eyes." Amara went still. Lady Lavinia descended one step. "Do not make that face. You have lived under my roof for 6 years. You have eaten my bread, worn my daughter's altered gowns, and enjoyed the protection of my name. Your father left nothing but debts and an inconvenient reputation. Lord Voss has agreed to overlook both. Because you promised him my mother's settlement land. Because I arranged a future for you. You sold what was not yours. Lady Lavinia's smile vanished. For one dangerous moment, the garden was utterly silent. Then she said, "You will go inside, you will smile, you will accept Lord Voss's public announcement at supper, and if you embarrass this family tonight, I will send your old nurse from the cottage by morning." Amara's face changed. Nathaniel saw it, even through the hedge. Not fear for herself, fear for someone powerless. "Mrs. Wren has nowhere to go. Then behave as if you remember that." Amara bowed her head. Lady Lavinia turned back toward the house. Amara followed. Nathaniel remained hidden until their footsteps faded. Only then did he step from behind the hedge. The moon touched his face. He looked older than when Amara had last seen him. Harder. The easy warmth of youth had been carved into something colder and more controlled. At 31, Nathaniel Vale was considered one of the most dangerous men in the House of Lords, not because he shouted, but because he listened before he struck. Tonight, he had listened, and everything had changed. He had come to Avington House for one reason, Lord Voss. For months, rumors had followed Voss through the county, missing dowry funds, pressured marriages. Young women pushed into settlements that somehow made him richer and them quieter. Nathaniel had quietly purchased several of the man's debts, traced two false legal transfers, and arrived tonight under the polite excuse of attending Lady Lavinia's winter assembly. He had expected fraud. He had not expected Amara. He had certainly not expected to hear her say she still loved him. A footman appeared at the terrace doors and looked startled to find the Duke emerging from the garden shadows. "Your Grace, shall I announce you?" Nathaniel looked toward the glowing windows of the ballroom. Inside, music swelled. Lord Voss laughed. Lady Lavinia smiled. Amara stood near a pillar, with her face composed into quiet ruin. "Yes," Nathaniel said. His voice was calm now. Too calm. "Announce me." The footman hurried ahead. The ballroom at Avington House glittered beneath chandeliers. Ladies in silk turned like jeweled birds. Gentlemen spoke in low clusters near the card tables. A string quartet played a country dance no one truly cared about. At the far side of the room, Amara accepted a glass of lemonade from Lord Voss without drinking it. Voss was broad, red-faced, and expensively dressed, his waistcoat strained slightly at the buttons. His mouth smiled often. His eyes did not. "You vanished," he said. "I stepped outside." "You will not do that after we are married." Amara's fingers tightened around the glass. Voss leaned closer. "I dislike searching for what is mine." Before she could answer, the butler's voice rang across the ballroom. "His Grace, Nathaniel Vale, Duke of Blackridge." The glass slipped from Amara's hand. It struck the floor and shattered. Every head turned. Nathaniel stood in the doorway in a black evening coat, rain-dark hair brushed back, silver eyes fixed on the woman who had just whispered his name into a dead garden. For 4 years, Amara had imagined seeing him again. She had imagined herself proud, cold, untouched. Instead, she stood among broken glass, unable to breathe. Lord Voss looked from her face to the Duke's. Lady Lavinia's smile stiffened. Nathaniel crossed the ballroom. People parted without being asked. He stopped before Amara and bowed. Not deeply, not warmly, but with a grave courtesy that somehow hurt more than anger would have. "Lady Amara," her voice nearly failed. "Your Grace." 4 years collapsed into two words. Voss cleared his throat. "Blackridge. I did not know you were acquainted with my betrothed." Nathaniel's eyes did not leave Amara. Once. That single word struck the room like a dropped candle. Once. A history hidden inside one syllable. Lady Lavinia glided forward. "Your Grace, what a pleasure. We had not expected you." "No," Nathaniel said. "I imagine not." Her eyes sharpened. Voss laughed too loudly. "Well, you arrive in time for happy news. I intend to announce my engagement to Lady Amara tonight." Nathaniel finally looked at him. Do you? Voss's smile faltered. I do. How interesting. A hush spread around them. Amara looked down at the broken glass near her slippers. A maid hurried forward to clean it, but Nathaniel lifted one hand. Allow me. He crouched before Amara, in the middle of the ballroom. A duke, on one knee, picking shards of glass from the floor so she would not cut her hem. Whispers exploded behind fans. Amara stared at him, stunned. Nathaniel gathered the largest pieces into a linen napkin, then looked up at her. Only she could hear what he said. Do not drink anything Voss gives you. Her blood went cold. What? He rose. His face revealed nothing. Aloud, he said, There. No harm done. But Amara knew there was harm everywhere. In the garden. In the past. In the letter she had believed. In the man beside her. And in the Duke who had returned at the exact moment her life was about to be handed to someone cruel. Nathaniel bowed once more. Then he moved away, leaving Amara with one question burning hotter than fear. Had he come to save her? Or had he come to watch her fall? By midnight, Avington House had become a beautiful trap. The guests smiled. The candles burned. The musicians played as though nothing dangerous had entered the room, wearing a black coat and a ducal title. But Amara could feel the change. It moved beneath the laughter, like a crack beneath ice. Nathaniel Vale did not seek her again after warning her. He spoke with Lord Harrington near the mantel, accepted wine he did not drink, and listened more than he answered. To anyone else, he looked indifferent. Amara knew better. He was watching everything. Lord Voss watched him back. Lady Lavinia watched Amara. And Amara, who had spent 6 years learning to appear invisible in rooms that fed on weakness, watched them all. At supper, Lady Lavinia rose with a glass in her hand. My friends, she began, voice bright as polished silver, before we dine, Lord Voss has asked permission to share a matter of family happiness. Amara's stomach turned. This was the moment, the announcement, the noose dressed as celebration. Lord Voss stood beside her, already smiling. My dear friends, I am honored to announce. Forgive me. Nathaniel's voice did not rise. It did not need to. The room quieted instantly. Lord Voss turned slowly. The Duke of Blackridge stood near the center of the supper room, one hand resting lightly on the back of a chair. I believe announcements of legal consequence are best made after all parties understand the documents involved. Lady Lavinia went pale beneath her powder. Voss gave a short laugh. Legal consequence? My dear Blackridge, this is an engagement, not a parliamentary motion. With you, Lord Voss, the difference is often difficult to detect. A few guests gasped. Amara felt the room tilt. Voss's smile hardened. I do not take your meaning. You rarely take what is not profitable. The silence sharpened. Lady Lavinia moved quickly. Your Grace, perhaps this conversation is better suited to the study. I agree. Nathaniel looked at Amara. Lady Amara should be present. No. Lady Lavinia said too quickly. Every eye turned to her. She recovered. I mean only that my niece is tired. She is delicate. Amara spoke before fear could stop her. I am not delicate. Nathaniel's gaze flickered toward her, not with surprise, with approval. Lord Voss's expression darkened. Amara, this is not your concern. She looked at him. My life is being announced. I believe I may claim some small concern in it. The room murmured. Lady Lavinia's fingers tightened around her glass. Nathaniel turned to the guests. Excuse us. It was not a request. In the study, the air smelled of old leather, banked fire, and tension. Lady Lavinia entered first. Voss followed. Amara came after, with Nathaniel last. He closed the door gently behind him. The click sounded final. Lady Lavinia faced him. You have no right to interfere in my niece's arrangements. No? No. Nathaniel walked to the desk and placed a folded paper upon it. Then let us discuss rights. Voss looked at the paper. What is that? A copy of the settlement Lord Voss required from Lady Amara before the wedding. Specifically, the transfer of Elloway Hill and its surrounding farms. Amara's lips parted. My mother's land. Yes, Nathaniel said. Lady Lavinia lifted her chin. Land requires management. Amara has no skill for such things. Nathaniel looked at her. Curious. I have here three rent ledgers from Elloway Hill, corrected in Lady Amara's hand. Clearer than the solicitor's copies, actually. Amara stared at him. How did you... Your old steward kept duplicates. Voss stepped forward. You have been digging where you have no business. Nathaniel's voice cooled. I have found that men with clean business rarely object to light. Voss's face flushed. That land was offered freely. Amara turned to her aunt. Was it? Lady Lavinia's silence answered first. Then she said, You do not understand the position you are in. You have no fortune without this family. No, Nathaniel said, that is not true. Lady Lavinia's eyes snapped to him. He placed a second paper on the desk. This is the original copy of Lady Helena Elloway's marriage settlement. Amara's mother left Elloway Hill in trust to her daughter. It cannot be sold, transferred, pledged, or used as marriage consideration without Lady Amara's signed consent after her 25th birthday. Amara went still. I am 24. Exactly. Voss looked at Lavinia. You said she could sign now. She can, Lavinia snapped. With family approval. Nathaniel shook his head. No, she cannot. Which means either you misunderstood the trust, or you intended to force the marriage first and pressure her for the signature after. The room went silent. Amara's hands trembled. All these years, she had believed herself penniless. Dependent. A burden living on charity. Her mother had left her land, and her aunt had hidden it. Voss took one step toward Nathaniel. You are making a grave accusation. I am making a beginning. A beginning of what? Nathaniel's eyes turned cold. Your ruin. Voss laughed, but it sounded strained now. Lady Lavinia moved to the desk and snatched up the document. This proves nothing. No, Nathaniel said, but the man waiting in the hall does. The study door opened. Mr. Pembry, the old Elloway steward, stepped inside. Amara remembered him at once. He had served her father before debts swallowed their household. She had not seen him in 6 years. His hair had gone white. His eyes filled when he saw her. Miss Amara, she whispered. Mr. Pembry. He bowed. Forgive me. I should have come sooner. Lady Lavinia hissed. You had no right to enter this house. I had every right to preserve my late master's papers. Nathaniel stepped aside. Tell Lady Amara what you told me. Pembry looked at her. Your mother's land was never lost. Your father never sold it. He borrowed against other holdings, yes, but Elloway Hill was protected. After his death, I sent copies of the trust to your aunt. Twice. Both times, I was told you were too fragile to manage such knowledge. Amara turned to Lady Lavinia. Fragile? Her aunt's face hardened. You were 18, grieving, and foolish. I was useful. The truth came out before Amara could soften it. Lady Lavinia flinched. Amara stepped closer. You dressed control as protection. You let me wear Margaret's old gowns and called it generosity. You told me I had nothing. You let me thank you for shelter while you kept my inheritance hidden. You ungrateful girl. No. The word rang through the study. Amara had never spoken to her aunt that way. Not once. She felt fear. But beneath it, something stronger. No, I am done being grateful for what was stolen from me. Nathaniel watched her, and for one brief second, the cold Duke from the ballroom vanished. In his eyes, she saw the young man who had once looked at her as if she were made of mourning. Then Voss moved. He grabbed the settlement copy from the desk and thrust it toward the fire. Nathaniel caught his wrist before the paper reached the flames. The motion was swift, controlled, and silent. Voss struggled once. Nathaniel did not. He merely held him there. "Do not," Nathaniel said quietly, "make the mistake of thinking my restraint is weakness." Voss's face darkened. After a moment, he released the paper. Nathaniel let go. Voss stepped back, breathing hard. "This is not finished." "No," Nathaniel said. "It will be finished publicly." Lady Lavinia's eyes widened. "You would shame this family before guests?" Nathaniel looked at Amara. The choice was hers. For once, someone was asking. Amara drew in a slow breath. "Yes," she said. Lady Lavinia stared at her. Amara repeated it. "Yes, let them hear." They returned to the supper room together. The guests looked up with eager curiosity and badly hidden hunger. Nothing delighted society more than private conflict returning with public consequences. Lord Voss tried to walk ahead, but Nathaniel's voice stopped him. "One moment." The Duke turned to the room. "Lord Voss's announcement has been delayed." A murmur passed through the guests. Nathaniel continued. "It seems there are unresolved legal questions concerning Lady Amara's inheritance and whether it was concealed from her for the benefit of others." Lady Lavinia gripped the back of a chair. Margaret Corvin, Amara's cousin, stared at her mother in horror. Lord Voss forced a laugh. "This is absurd theatre." Amara stepped forward. "No." Every eye turned. Her knees felt weak, but her voice held. "For 6 years, I was told I had nothing. Tonight I have learned that my mother left me land, protected land, land that was nearly used to trap me into a marriage I did not want." The room erupted. Lady Lavinia said sharply, "Amara!" But Amara did not stop. "I will not marry Lord Voss." A woman gasped. Someone whispered, "At last." Voss's face twisted. "You will regret humiliating me." Nathaniel moved before anyone else could. He stood between Voss and Amara. "You will address Lady Amara with respect," Voss sneered. "Is she under your protection now?" Nathaniel did not answer. Amara did. "No," she said. "I am under my own." For the first time that evening, Nathaniel smiled. It was faint, almost nothing. But Amara saw it. And something in her chest, locked for 4 years, opened one careful inch. The assembly ended in scandal. Guests left with cloaks half fastened and whispers fully formed. Lord Voss stormed out before midnight. Lady Lavinia retreated upstairs. Margaret cried in the morning room, not from guilt exactly, but from the terrifying collapse of the world as she understood it. Amara went back to the garden. She did not know why. Perhaps because the night had begun there. Perhaps because some truths needed the same ground beneath them when they changed shape. The fountain was silver beneath the moon. The dead roses trembled in the cold. She heard footsteps behind her. This time, she did not mistake them for wind. "You were behind the hedge," she said. Nathaniel stopped. "Yes." She turned. The Duke stood several paces away, careful not to come closer without permission. "You heard me." "Yes." Her face burned. "All of it." His voice softened. "Enough." She looked down. "You should not have listened." "I know. You should have walked away." "I know." "Why did you not?" For the first time all night, Nathaniel looked uncertain. "Because you said you still loved me." The words hung between them. Painful. Beautiful. Dangerous. Amara closed her eyes. "I did not mean for you to hear that." "No. I thought I was alone." "I know." He took one careful step closer. "Amara, 4 years ago, I received your note." Her eyes opened. "My note? The one returning my ring? The one saying you could never marry me?" She stared at him. "I wrote no such note." The garden seemed to shift beneath them. Nathaniel went utterly still. Amara's voice trembled. "I received your letter. You said your father had forbidden the match. You said I had been a pleasant mistake. You said I should not wait. Nathaniel's face drained of color. No. The wind moved through the roses. One dead petal fell between them. No, he said again. I wrote to you every week after I left London. I begged you to wait until my father's illness passed. Then when he died, I wrote that I would come as soon as I could. Every letter was returned. Amara pressed one hand to her mouth. My aunt. Nathaniel's jaw tightened. Or Voss. Both. The answer came from behind them. Mr. Pembry stood at the edge of the path, holding a small locked box. I am sorry, he said, but there is more. The locked box had belonged to Amara's father. It was small, iron-bound and stained with age. Mr. Pembry carried it with both hands, as if it contained not paper, but bones. Amara stared at it. My father's? Yes, Pembry said. I kept it after his death because he told me never to let Lady Lavinia touch it. I should have brought it to you sooner, but your aunt dismissed me from the household within a month of the funeral. After that, every letter I sent went unanswered. Nathaniel looked at the box. Do you have the key? Pembry shook his head. No, Miss Amara does. I do not. You do. The old steward's eyes moved to her throat. Your mother's locket. Amara's hand rose slowly. She wore the locket always, though Lady Lavinia had tried to take it twice. A plain oval of gold, dented at one edge, containing a faded curl of her mother's hair. Her fingers trembled as she opened it. Inside, behind the tiny glass, was a thin brass key, no longer than her fingernail. She had never known. Nathaniel did not reach for it. He let her remove it herself. The key turned with a soft click. Inside the box lay letters. Many letters. Some tied in black ribbon. Some sealed with Nathaniel's crest. Some in Amara's own hand, unopened. For a long moment, no one spoke. The dead rose garden seemed to hold its breath. Amara picked up the first letter with Nathaniel's seal. Her hands shook too badly to open it. Nathaniel gently said, May I? She nodded. He opened the letter and read only the first lines before his voice changed. My dearest Amara, my father worsens by the hour. I cannot leave him tonight, though every part of me is already on the road to you. Do not believe silence if silence comes. It will not be mine. Amara made a sound and turned away. Nathaniel stopped reading. Pembry removed another bundle. These are yours, Miss Amara, addressed to His Grace, never sent. She took one. The handwriting was hers. Young. Hopeful. Nathaniel, Aunt says it is improper to write so often, but I cannot help it. The house is colder without your letters. I am trying to be patient. Please come when you can. She pressed the letter to her chest. For 4 years, she had believed herself abandoned. For 4 years, he had believed himself rejected. Between them stood a box of stolen words. Nathaniel's face hardened into something colder than rage. We confront her tonight. Amara looked toward the house. No. He turned. No? No. Her voice was quiet but firm. Tonight, she will cry. She will faint. She will claim she did it for my good. She will turn the room into a stage and make herself the wounded one. She cannot be allowed to keep this hidden. She will not. Amara closed the box, but this time we choose the room. Nathaniel watched her. Then he bowed his head slightly. As you wish. The next morning, Lady Lavinia announced that Amara was unwell and would take breakfast in her room. Amara walked into the breakfast parlour 10 minutes later in a dark green gown that had once belonged to Margaret but had been altered so perfectly by Mrs. Wren that it looked made for her. Her face was pale. Her eyes were clear. Every conversation stopped. Lady Lavinia froze with a teacup halfway to her mouth. Nathaniel stood by the window, invited back under the excuse of business. Mr. Pembry sat near the door with the locked box at his feet. Two solicitors had arrived from the village. Margaret sat beside her mother, looking as though she had not slept. Lord Voss was not present. He had sent a letter at dawn demanding apology. Nathaniel had sent one back advising caution. No second letter came. Amara walked to the head of the table. My aunt has something to explain. Lady Lavinia set down her cup. Amara, you are overwrought. No, I am informed. The solicitor opened the box. One by one, the letters were placed upon the table. Nathaniel's stolen letters, Amara's unsent letters, the false letter in Nathaniel's name, the false note in Amara's name returning his ring. The room tightened around every page. Margaret looked at her mother. Mama! Lady Lavinia's face had gone grey. Amara spoke first. For 4 years, I believed the Duke of Blackridge had abandoned me. For 4 years, he believed I had rejected him. Both beliefs came from letters neither of us wrote. The solicitor held up the forged note. This handwriting has already been compared to household account entries written by Lady Lavinia's former secretary. Lady Lavinia rose. You cannot prove... I can, Margaret whispered. Every eye turned to her. She looked terrified. Then she looked at Amara. I saw Mr. Vale's letters once. Years ago, in Mama's drawer, I thought they were old bills. When I asked, she slapped my hand and told me never to touch private papers. Lady Lavinia's voice cracked. Margaret. No. Margaret's face crumpled. You told me Amara was ungrateful. You told me she was foolish and dramatic and that she needed managing. But you lied to all of us. Lady Lavinia's mask shattered. You stupid girls, she hissed. Do you know what would have happened if she married Blackridge then? She would have left this house. Her land would have gone with her. Her father's debts would have swallowed us. Margaret's season would have been ruined. So you ruined me instead, Amara said. Her aunt's eyes flashed. I kept this family alive. You kept yourself comfortable. Lady Lavinia looked around the room for sympathy and found only witnesses. The solicitor folded the forged letters. There will be legal consequences. For what? She snapped. For protecting my family. Nathaniel finally spoke. For fraud, coercion, suppression of trust documents, and conspiracy with Lord Voss to obtain property by marriage pressure. At the name Voss, Lady Lavinia went silent. Amara looked at her carefully. What did he promise you? Her aunt's mouth closed. Nathaniel answered, £10,000 once Elloway Hill transferred. Margaret covered her mouth. Amara did not cry. That surprised everyone, perhaps even herself. She had cried for years in hidden places, behind doors, in gardens, into pillows, into silence. Now the truth stood in daylight, and her tears had no work left to do. Lady Lavinia was removed from control of Avington's household within the week. Her husband, weak but not entirely without shame, signed the necessary papers under solicitor supervision. Margaret, shaken by the truth, asked Amara's forgiveness and received not full pardon, but the chance to become better. Lord Voss attempted to leave the county. Nathaniel's evidence reached London first. By the end of the month, Voss's creditors circled him, and three former victims of his marriage schemes came forward through solicitors Nathaniel quietly funded. He did not make speeches about it, he simply ensured the doors opened for those who had been trapped behind them. Amara moved temporarily to Elloway Hill. It was not a grand estate. It was better. A grey stone house on a slope above green fields, with apple trees along the lane, and a kitchen that smelled of bread. Mrs. Wren came with her, weeping openly when Amara gave her the largest sunny room and called it permanent. For the first time in 6 years, Amara owned a key to her own front door. Nathaniel did not visit for 2 weeks. He wrote first. Not long letters. Honest ones. Amara. I will come only when invited. I will not mistake rescue for claim. What was stolen from us must not be replaced by haste. She read that line 5 times. Then she sent a reply. Come on Thursday. The garden has no dead roses, but it does have a bench. He came Thursday, then the Thursday after, then twice in 1 week when rain ruined the roads, but not his determination. They walked the fields. They spoke of the letters. They spoke of the 4 years that could not be returned. Sometimes they sat quietly because grief, once proved false, still had to be lived through before it loosened. One afternoon, beneath the apple trees, Nathaniel stopped walking. Amara. She looked at him. Yes? I loved you then. She closed her eyes briefly. I know. I love you now. Her fingers tightened around her shawl. I know that too. I am not asking for an answer today. She looked at him then, and for the first time in years, the smile that touched her mouth did not look borrowed from someone braver. I whispered the answer in a garden before I knew you could hear me. Nathaniel went still. The wind moved through the apple branches. You still mean it? Yes. He looked as though the world had shifted beneath him and become kinder. Slowly, he held out his hand. Not demanding. Not claiming. Offering. She placed her hand in his. That was all. For a long moment, that was enough. They married in spring. Not at Avington. Amara refused to begin her new life beneath the roof, where so much of it had been stolen. They married at Elloway Hill, in the small chapel where her parents had once stood. Mrs. Wren cried through the entire service. Mr. Pembry stood proudly near the front. Margaret came quietly, dressed in simple lavender, and held Amara's bouquet while the vows were spoken. Nathaniel wore the black ribbon at his wrist, the same one Amara had kept hidden for 4 years. After the ceremony, when the guests spilled into the garden, Amara slipped away for one moment to the apple bench. Nathaniel found her there. This time, he did not stand behind the hedge. He came where she could see him. May I join you? He asked. She smiled. You may. He sat beside her. The air smelled of blossoms and warm grass. Somewhere beyond the chapel wall, guests laughed softly. Sunlight moved over the fields her mother had saved for her, before anyone knew she would need saving. Amara looked at Nathaniel. I used to think love was something that happened in secret and hurt where no one could see. And now? Now I think love is someone hearing the truth and choosing not to use it against you. Nathaniel took her hand. Then I will spend the rest of my life proving you right. She leaned her head lightly against his shoulder. No grand declaration followed. No music swelled. No one burst into applause. The strongest promises, Amara had learned, were often quiet enough for only two people to hear. Years later, people in the county would still tell the story incorrectly. Some said the Duke had saved Lady Amara from a cruel engagement. Some said he had exposed a wicked aunt. Some said he had ruined Lord Voss with one letter and one look. But Amara knew the truth. The story had begun before any ballroom, before any solicitor, before any public scandal. It began in a garden, when she thought no one could hear her. It began when she whispered, "I still love him." And the Duke behind the hedge loved her enough to listen, leave, and return the right way. So tell me, should Nathaniel have revealed himself in the garden that first night, or was he right to protect Amara's privacy until the truth was ready? Share your thoughts in the comments. And if you love emotional Regency stories filled with hidden letters, cruel family secrets, and powerful second chances, subscribe for the next story.